Hello. In this episode of the M4 Death Trip, during our discussion last week of the 2011 found footage horror Apollo 18, John and I managed to get in a shameless Kickstarter plug, a lengthy digression about the Doctor Who episode that stole Apollo 18's plot wholesale, and the complete and faintly embarrassing failure to remember the name of Hammer horror legend Jimmy Sangster. Sorry, Jimmy. In discussing Apollo 18, it's only fair to warn you that we will be going into plot spoilers right from the very beginning of the podcast. This is the M4 Death Trip, Episode 2, Apollo 18. So, this week, I launched my Kickstarter.
Straight in there. Bloody hell, we haven't even got it.
All right, should we put that at the end?
No. Everyone will turn off then. We do it now. Go on.
All right.
I was going to go, this is how my week's been. What's your been like? Go on, straight into it. Go on. See your plugs.
This week, I launched my Kickstarter for a book based on We Don't Go Back, which, of course, is the strand of essays about folk horror movies that I've been putting on my blog since late 2016, where I'm a day into the Kickstarter at the time recording and got nearly 800 quid, so I'm quite pleased with that. And of course it's set to have three essays in it by you as well.
It is, yeah. I was reading that. That's going to have some pretty good stuff in it. I'm looking forward to reading on about the woman in black.
And
the Borderlands, and one as yet to be written one, which is a potentially controversial choice.
But I think completely right.
But we'll leave that one until it's ready for your blog.
Or suspense,
or excitement. Tomorrow's finale for Doctor Who has nothing on what my third piece be for your blog. But yes, I will look forward to that being published in a way. And the quick rate of return for your Kickstarter, I think, shows there's a good level of interest in it.
I'm quite pleased with that, yeah. So, speaking of Doctor Who, right,
yes.
we're going this time to talk about a story about a moon base, well, a moon expedition that has been massacred by spider creatures, and the people who find it and the terrible things that ensue, with a poster that shows someone in a spacesuit reaching for the viewer. We are, of course, talking about Kill the Moon. Oh, no, wait, we're not.
Yes, we're talking about found footage horror, 2011 found footage horror Apollo 18.
Yes, indeed we are.
Which I'd never heard of, but was recommended on the basis of I'd watched Wake Wood, so I thought this would be a nice follow-on before we branched out into somewhere else. And I liked the idea that neither of us had heard of it or knew really anything about it, so I liked about going into it. It was absolutely critically panned, but it did relatively well at the box office. It took $25 million worldwide. On a budget of $5 million, no accounting for taste. But yes, the first thing I thought when I started watching it, and as a big Doctor Who fan, I appreciate that Doctor Who borrows liberally from a multitude of sources. If you look at early Tom Baker era, when Robert Holmes was script editor, you will see not necessarily specific films, but you will see a look and feel of a range of type. You will see Brain of Morbius is a rip of Universal horror. Pyramids of Mars is a rip of Hammer horror. Talons of Wang Chiang is a rip off of everything from Fu Manchu to Sherlock Holmes. And that's continued into the new series. Sleep No More was a found footage. Was then doing found footage shows. Doctor Who has always borrowed liberally and given it its own twist, and that's worked. Nevertheless, I was very interested and surprised when one of the main plot points of the 2014 Doctor Who episode, Kill the Moon, really, spoiler alert, the moon's an egg. People get attacked by big spiders on the moon. So when, in watching Apollo 18, the threat is big rock spiders attack people on the moon, I did think, ooh, Peter Harness watched this, didn't he?
Yeah, what was that quote? Genius steals and Doctor Who gets it off the back of a lorry at a cut price?
Oh, it's, the Oscar Wilde quote is, talent borrows, genius steals. And Ben Aronovich added the postscript, and Doctor Who fans get off the back of a lorry, no questions asked.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, I think this is a prime example of that, isn't it?
It is, but normally you see Doctor Who stealing a style or a feel to use rather than a specific plot
story. Point. Yeah. To actually just steal the story,
yeah,
is another question entirely.
It's for different reasons, but one of the things that I thought when I pointed out to you is the cover of the Blu-ray. By the way, that's really bad photoshopping on that Blu-ray, because the astronaut with the broken visor, his head is reaching out, his head is pointing down, yet the face behind it is straight on. It looks a bit unrealistic. God. But yes, it was clearly not only did Peter Harness nick a story from Apollo 18, whoever designed the main image for the Doctor Who episode Kill the Moon was choosing a very, very similar very similar theme.
Do you think that's a coincidence or
I don't think it's coincidence, no.
Okay.
So what were your initial thoughts on the film, how it began, how it grew?
I completely missed it first time around. I hadn't seen it. It had fallen completely under my radar. I think that when I first saw it, the thing that immediately struck me in the first couple of minutes was, for the most part, how authentic they had tried to make the 1960s 1960s feel of the film. The sequences where they're in mission control and they're being interviewed, and there's some cine film of them at a barbecue or something. These things looked, you know, they'd clearly done really, really, they'd really tried to make it authentic looking, to make it look 1960s, look like mission control astronauts in the 1960s, so much so that I wasn't sure how much of it was actually inserted. I mean, obviously the three actors from the movie and the people playing their families are, you know, new, but I wasn't sure how much of the other stuff was inserted around them was actually authentic or not.
It's meant to be, I think, 1974.
Yes, 1970 yeah. Something.
He meant this is post Nixon. Nixon's resigned. Isn't there? There's a reference to Watergate.
Yeah.
And it's Christmas, I think, isn't it? Because they took. Yeah, they're so it's December 70. It's December 74. But yes, I suppose they're still using 8mm cine cameras for home movies. I found it on the one hand, it was an efficient opening in setting the scene. Although I didn't get until later, and maybe I missed it, maybe it wasn't in that the Apollo 18 mission was back on at the request of the Department of Defense rather than NASA. I didn't get that until much later. I'm not sure if that was mentioned earlier.
I can't remember.
No, but then thinking on from that, if they were ultra top secret, you can't tell anyone, including your immediate family, would you really be recorded by NASA or whoever to camera?
And here we come back to the basic problem with found footage films generally.
And a found footage film set in the 70s has the issue with the size of equipment needed. So I thought this will be interesting in how they try and do it. There'll be a lot of areas. There'll be helmet cams, perhaps. There'll be plenty of this is for footage on in and outside the lander and the rover. But yes, within the obvious start of trying to set up an info dump efficiently and quickly to get the story underway, I thought that's a lot of information you're committing to the record for a top secret mission.
Including the cine film of the barbecue, where the guy gets the phone call that Apollo 18 is on and he can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Which, you know, at the start of the film, you know, it's not fully explained why they're going to the moon. That sort of, you run with that, but later on you think, hang on.
Would they not have just next time they were in at work been possibly briefed, particularly rather than I'm calling you up at home on a Saturday to tell you you're doing a top secret mission? Yeah, possibly. But yes, I thought that was, as you say, the one of the dichotomies you have with the found footage is that often it's criticised for you have the protagonist has to put themselves in harm's way in order to make a story. But here we have far more, much more information being committed to record than you would expect, which I suppose leads on to the fact, how is it a found footage film? I don't think there's any question of the footage in either the shuttle or the lando is meant to be being live broadcast to Houston, is it?
I wasn't sure about that. There was some ambiguity about the transmission and stuff.
Because they never talk to camera unless there's a specific reason, like when the colonel, what's his name, has been infected by the spider creature.
Nate,
yes. The captain puts the camera on him and is like, I want to record this. But most of the time, when the cameras are in and around the lander, they talk to mission control via radio link, which has absolutely no delay. But you let that go because that's just poetic license to get the story underway. Otherwise, it's a ridiculously long time. But I don't get the impression that this is transmitting. But in which case, I suppose, how would they ever hope to get the footage when it seems to be that they've been put on the moon to deliberately attract whatever they think's on the moon, these alien creatures? Do they expect to get them back? I mean, there's a revelation probably, I think, about just over halfway through, when Nate thinks that the transmitters they've been told to put up as listening devices, as part of a Cold War program, are actually things to attract whatever these creatures are. Are they expecting to get them back?
Yeah.
Because how are they going to access the footage?
Which is, of course, the plot of another well-known science fiction movie, to some extent.
Yes, I suppose it is.
You know, and with the same plot holes as the other science fiction movie.
Do you want to say what that film is, by the way?
Well, Alien, isn't it?
Yeah.
But with one obvious
difference is it's not found footage, so you haven't got to worry about what information's being recorded because it's in fiction.
Yes, and I mean, you know, you pointed out the fact that there's no time lapse with the wireless transmissions and things. And I think that sort of points us towards how tremendously difficult it is to make authentic looking found footage.
It is, but in a historical setting at the frontier of science. Yeah, you can't have a 4 minute delay between each line because it would mean that the film is several hours long and would be very boring.
Yes.
So you let that go for the artistic reasons, but while they've made an effort to like letterbox the much of the footage to make it look 8 or 16 millimeter, or actually probably 8 millimeter, or the black and white external footage, it doesn't do much for the pacing and the tension, and looking at the timings, my first thought was that it really dragged. But when I came to make some notes and thought about it, and then watched sequences again to check if that was true, what I was surprised about was the initial opening 20 minutes is actually, I thought, quite fast. They're on the moon, they're in space and deploying to the moon within 5 minutes of the film starting. There's the first odd power fluctuation or interference, as they call it, I think after about 10 minutes. But then after they go spacewalking and moonwalking and then put up the supposed transmitters, there's a small sequence where the screen highlights a circle behind one of the astronauts to show a rock moving.
Yes.
Which is clearly meant to be the conspiracy theorist that's got hold of this footage and uploaded it to the website wants to show it.
And likewise, that's what the close-ups are for. So when they have close-ups, they're actually grainy and they're not anymore.
Because they've closed in on the footage.
Yeah.
Rather than the cameras closed in. But that takes it to our pace, I think after about 12 minutes. And then within 20 minutes, they find the footprints, which then leads to the Russian lander and then leads to the quite effective scene with them finding the cosmonaut's body
in the pit.
That's the impact crater, which is done quite well with him just using a camera flash. That's the lights he has, which doesn't seem very efficient, but again, for effectiveness, for looking quite scary, that's one genuine young one. He discovers the cosmonaut's body.
Yeah, there's a desiccated corpse there. Yes,
which is good, and then it has a rip in it, and it has a rock inside the spacesuit, which then it seems weird. But before that, that's the opening 20 minutes. And I thought that's packed quite a lot in. That's racing through quite nicely. But yet after the sequence where Nate has been infected, which again is quite an effective scene where you see the spider creature run across his face inside his helmet.
Yes, inside his helmet. Yeah, that's.
He becomes infected and doesn't really remember what happened. And then they pull a piece of rock out of his it's quite shallow in his abdomen or his chest. Yeah. I think. But from that then it slows right down. And then he spends a lot of time being infected and then acting a bit weird and not much really happens. And it doesn't really... It builds to a crescendo for about 20, 25 minutes and then really drops off. And for maybe the last 10 minutes, 5 or 6 minutes of the film, are really quite exciting. But there's a good bit between that where not a huge amount happens.
Yeah.
And it doesn't build on a promising start, and I thought with the highlighting, the closing in of bits of footage to show things like, and they do it before, I think when the lander's been damaged and they show like a rock again, a rock is moving and it focuses in on that bit. Would it not have been better to go a stage further and just have this as done as a conspiracy documentary?
Yeah, and I mean to have sort of some guy with a neck beard talking in a nasal voice over the top of it and like stopping and saying, look right there, we've closed in there. And
you vox pop in a couple of people or you have head and toe interviews and you make it a bit Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World.
Yeah, and you kind of, you know, and I mean, evidently they had a go at doing the found footage thing. They, when the film came out, they had a website called lunartruth.com. And the idea was that they were half pretending at least that it was real stuff going on, that it was real footage. I think having a documentary, a mockumentary, would have actually improved on that
You wouldn't have needed to have relied on just the found footage, which stretches your patience with slightly awkwardness of watching the film. It plays the same trick over and again with, oh, there's bits of interference that goes, yeah, and we cut back to something else. And there's some nice framing, a bit where they right near the end where the infected Nate falls out of the rover. The camera on the rover goes to its side and you see the weird rock spidery creatures sort of moving a bit with them. There's a decent low bass sounds that unnerves you. But because there's so much that doesn't happen in between those bits where there's no real tension, tightening that up and having sort of, I don't know, a whistleblower from NASA or the Russians talking about it.
Or not talking about it.
Well, I mean, you've got the amount of information that's just sort of been lost post collapse of the Soviet Union. Yeah, we sent one of our cosmonauts there, and then there was this plan and then we picked up transmissions from the Americans about what Apollo 17 saw or something like that. That would have given it more mileage, and done something slightly interesting, giving you a similar probably running time, but reducing the need for you to have to rely on the footage, which stretches credibility and lessens tension and messes with the pacing somewhat.
And also has the issue where there are certain things that can't be explained without really, really stretching credibility. So, for instance, they use a Russian radio. And then yes. The Russians patch it through to the Department of Defense.
The Kremlin goes to the Pentagon pretty quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you've got to think how did that happen? And that's, fertile conspiracy theorist fare right there.
Yeah, indeed it is. Look how quickly that he was able to. We have record of this direct communication in 1974 between. Between the Kremlin and the Pentagon, or Houston, or wherever, but it's just done as a way of getting the American government to tell the captain that they're going to abandon the two guys on the moon. But yeah, that would have been far more interesting to use that and all that meant. It seems it's a huge missed opportunity that was as well, because you, in some ways the characters are quite boxed in. When you have the scene where the captain discovers that his rock sample is not in the bag where he put it. He doesn't think that it's going to be it's good. He knows it's not going to be Nate. Nate wouldn't have just done that deliberately, but there's no one else, so something else has happened. I thought it was an opportunity to explore that. How do you react when you're faced with something inexplicable? Do you ignore it? Do you follow it to its logical conclusion? Say therefore there is an outside force here somewhere, or do you just think, well, it can't be anything else? I don't know. I'm just not going to worry about it and get on with my mission. But it's brushed over fairly quickly, and I was frustrated that clearly that was something that you saw as insoluble. Are you not stressed? Do you not want to investigate that? Do you not want to talk that through? No, we just want to, carry on.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems, and I mean, this is fundamentally the problem that horror films generally have to get past in order to be convincing, is the stuff happening in order to have a set piece happen later on thing. The fact that characters will do stuff that makes no sense according to who they are and what they do, in order that something can happen that we can see. And the narrative tail wags the narrative dog in that respect. Some of that seems to have come up in Apollo 18. You know how I feel about Blood on Satan's Claw and about how fundamentally that's a film where pretty much the entire plot has the tail wagging the dog.
Has no character acting consistently or logically.
Yes.
In order to produce some horrific or at least disturbing set pieces.
Or at the very least, if not logically, because people aren't logical really, believably, which...
They leave that and they go and search. Well, they go and continue their mission, but for setting up the posts. I thought when they discovered the Russian lander, and they go, and one of them goes inside and has a look round, and then says, "Oh, all the equipment looks pretty similar," and then presses a few buttons and says, "Oh, I can put the power back on, and there's a full load of oxygen in here."
Yeah, there was a little bit on the nose, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. We're absolutely going to need that Russian lander before this film's out.
Chekhov's lander.
Yeah, Chekhov's lander, which had all the subtlety of being driven out with the JCB through the plot. Perhaps there was an easier way of doing it. I don't know. Maybe it would have made some tension if they didn't know if there was any power on the Russian lander. But at the time that Nate goes mad and smashes all the cameras and irreparably damages the American lander, and they're left with 20 minutes worth of oxygen in their spacesuits, and they had no choice but to go to the Russian lander, it might have had a bit more tension if you didn't know.
Decides to take Nate with him anyway.
He does take Nate with him anyway, but at that point you're still like, he's sick. I don't want to leave him here. I still think this is recoverable. And then he falls out, he goes mad, crashes the lander, gets dragged into the pit. And still then, the captain, Ben, isn't it, the captain?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Ben, Nate, and John's up in the orbiter.
Oh, John's up in the orbiter. John. Was John Collins? Michael Collins, wasn't it? Never mind.
No, it's John Gray, the character, of course.
I'm thinking of John Glenn. Sorry, that's what we're
John Glenn, yeah.
Anyway, it's when Ben still then goes in to try and rescue Nate, and only when there's a lot of rock spiders does he think, yeah, sort this for a game of soldiers, I'm out of here. So I can see why he still wants to take Nate with him, but I thought that would have the tension of, if you didn't know that they could survive in the capsule, that might have again made that bit more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was a film where you did sometimes wonder at the choices made, you know.
Are you in the film or by the writer and the director?
By the writer and the director, you know, just in how they decided to do stuff. Because, I mean, you know, it's terribly, terribly arrogant to look at a movie and think, if I was directing that, I would do much better. I remember seeing an interview with a guy who'd like script written a bunch of Harry Hammer films. Mm-hmm. And they let him direct one. I can't remember his name. And they let him direct one. And it's like one of the Frankenstein movies. And it's indescribably bad, you know. And he was like, well, I wasn't going to take the money. The past.
If my friend and fellow BFI patron Dave Thomas listened to this, I have no doubt he's screaming the name at his iPad of who that person is. But your general point is that that was the writer.
The writer is like going, oh, I could do better. And then they let him, and he did a dreadful, dreadful job.
Well, I'm not sure who does, either between the writer and the director of this. The writer from this is someone I'd never heard of called Brian Miller. I'm assuming it's not the actor and husband of Doctor Who, Sarah Jane actor, Elizabeth Sladen, Brian Miller, who's in Peter Capaldi's first Doctor Who episode and also in a Doctor Who story called Snake Dance. I'd never heard of him, and is it the director's only English language film?
Isn't it produced by the bloke who gave us Night Watch?
The Russian vampire film. You mean that?
Well, yeah, the Russian urban fantasy movie with vampires, werewolves, and stuff.
Yeah, which is really, really, really trying so hard. I'm still recovering from the shot in Night Watch. Of going in through the camera, going in through the exhaust pipe, throughout the entire engine, out to the starter motor, and then out of where the key is when he turns it on. That was like, good God, how much effort are you putting into this? Is it in the right areas?
And the subtitles as well, the sort of weird subtitles that go all over the place.
But now we're thinking about Night Watch, which I haven't watched for ages, rather than Apollo 18, which probably tells you enough. In yourself about what we then thought of.
So the director of Apollo 18 is Gonzalo Lopez Gallego.
Okay, so this was his first
English language film.
Well, I mean, it's not uncommon that a found footage film is directed by a young and experienced director, because it's often a good way to cut your teeth. It's relatively low cost. Although, having said that, I suppose it had a $5 million budget, Apollo 18, so it wasn't all that small.
Clearly, there was a lot of thought in the actual look of the thing. They worked very, very hard to make the found footage look as authentic as they possibly could.
It probably stretches credibility a little with gravity on the moon seems very similar to gravity on Earth.
Yeah, weird that.
Yeah. Although, he's right where he could turn the lander over, the rover over quite effortlessly to write it, because it would have weighed a sixth of what it did on Earth. But the jumping around, they came down pretty quickly when they were walking. I thought that was,
filmed it on Earth.
Exactly.
Stanley Kubrick to direct it.
Could there be that weird, could you have Sean Connery running through at some point? That was Diamonds Are Forever reference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
But also like the classic conspiracy theory that Stanley Kubrick directed the moon landing on a back lot in Hollywood.
Oh, I remember it as it was in England, but that's a conspiracy. I don't think he did. That's all right.
Well, no, obviously he didn't.
So, concluding what we thought of Apollo 18, I thought it was a genuinely interesting idea, and as you say, there was real effort made to get the look and feel of both the period and the piece right. But it simply wasn't the best way to tell that story.
Yeah. I mean, I quite liked the idea that they wanted a movie that was conspiracy fodder. I quite liked the idea of a movie that was the launch of 1,000 conspiracy theories. I know someone who loves watching YouTube conspiracy theories. And a lot of the sort of footage that you see on YouTube in these sorts of things is like the footage that they tried to make in Apollo 18. So they weren't just trying to make ersatz 1974 space footage. They were trying to make ersatz 1974 space footage of the kind that you see uploaded to YouTube all the time. But I think that they were still within the sort of circle of the Blair Witch as well, because look, we're talking about a found footage movie. We haven't mentioned the Blair Witch yet. It's poor
we haven't mentioned the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah, because
it's a bigger found footage to movie, isn't Blair Witch it? Project.
You gotta, you know.
Not Cannibal Holocaust, man.
No, not Cannibal Holocaust. No, the Blair Witch, of course, had a whole bunch of transmedia around it. Did I still call it transmedia? I don't know
what you mean. Supporting back to the guys and people, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so in fact, the documentary that they broadcast on the Sci-Fi Channel, Beyond the Blair Witch, where they did a fake documentary about the young people who disappeared in Burkittsville in the forest, and, you know, they talked to their families and their lovers and, you know, and then they talked a little bit about this history of the Blair Witch, and that's actually more interesting than the film The Blair Witch Project. And you know, and there's a comic book that came out, which I own a copy of, which is essentially, you know, you think a comic book tie into a movie is going to be really tacky, but what they did was that they had someone draw a sort of little zine comic that was drawn by someone who was suffering from a severe psychiatric illness, and then said, "This is a real comic found by somebody who disappeared in the drawn by somebody who disappeared in the woods and then came back and spent the rest of his life until he committed suicide, standing on street corners handing it to people." We've decided to adapt it with like professional comic artists.
Oh, I should read that as well. But yes.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And, you know, and in the back, they give you a few pages of the zine, which is like horribly scrawled and all over the place and tortured and actually quite disturbing.
As you would expect.
And as you would expect. You know, and they couldn't do that now. But back in 1998-99, they were able to prevent Heather, Josh and Mike from actually going into the public eye. So a lot of people, you know, Heather Donahue's parents apparently were receiving condolence messages for a good few months after the movie came out.
Really?
Really? And that sort of thing, I think, was what the makers of Apollo 18 were trying to do. They were trying to create, with their lunartruth.com website, they were like going, we're going to add to the canon of YouTube conspiracy footage. But they were doing it in the style of Blair Witch. So they just sort of put it out there and sort of made some transmedia around it without really quite getting to the sort of heart of why YouTube conspiracy footage is its own genre.
Indeed. And that's why a documentary in itself, or a mockumentary in itself, would have been, I think, more rounded. Particularly years later. I didn't know there was a documentary on the Blair Witch that was done as transmedia as part of the canon, as it were. But if that doesn't survive in the public consciousness in the way that the parent film does, it probably behoves the film to be more complete in message. Yes. that it wants to present, and in that.
You see, I think the Blair Witch Project was a complete movie in its message, and you have a character arc, and you have stuff happening, and all right, at the end the mask comes off in the last 30 seconds, but you know what I'm saying.
But also, if Apollo 18 had equivalent transmedia 6 years ago when it was released, then maybe that was made it more enjoyable. But all I have now to judge it by is the film on the Blu-ray.
Yeah, because the conspiracy website that was attached to it is, of course,
indeed,
not gone.
Yeah, there's a. I think we both checked.
We did.
Just to have a look. So what I'm left with is the film, and I'm left wishing that there could be some that it could be a mockumentary with equivalent fake interviews and people pointing out a fictional director's commentary over it to say look at that bit would be equally as helpful. As it is, it wasn't totally terrible. It had an interesting start, and the very end was gripping, but there's a huge level of padding in the middle and not quite the right format in which to tell the story it sets us. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there.
Did you like it more or less than Wakewood?
I liked it more than Wakewood.
I think I agree as well.
I felt that it did hold together in the end. You know, you could sit through it from start to end without seeing the transmedia that no longer exists.
Short, wasn't it? Apart from if you ignore the credits, it comes in at about 75 minutes.
Yeah, it's nice and lean, which a fan footage movie really has to be. Fan footage is hard to watch. Yeah, I think on the whole, you know, it doesn't get three thumbs up or anything, but you know, it was a perfectly reasonable.
More than half a Burning Wicker Man.
Yeah, and also, I think I got my money's worth. I got the Blu-ray off of eBay for £1.70.
You're better than me. I got it for £3.50.
this seems to be a running theme, it doesn't it?
Yes, and perhaps we should try and go for something more modern or potentially more well thought of next time and see. Or shall we just?
Yes,
I'm just worried that if we continue to trawl the bargain basements of folk horror and fan footage, we'll end up saying at some point, "Oh, can we just watch a film we really liked?" That would be nice.
Yes, indeed. Well, we'll have a think about what to watch
indeed,
next time.
Indeed, we will.
You've been listening to episode 2 of the M4 Death Trip, Apollo 18, with John Deere and me, Howard Ingham. You can find John's writing at viewsfromahill.com. And my own at room207press.com. Theme music is by The Hare and the Moon. Thanks for listening.